Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
We always follow up Mental Health Monday on a Monday with Tuesday edition of Mental Health Extra with Jake Mills from Chasing the Stigma joining us in the studio. Jake, it's great to see you. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's been a while since I've seen you.
I know. I like that you said we always follow up, but recently we haven't, have we?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not going to point the finger.
No.
And say who's responsible for that.
I think just get it out the way. Just do it. Because I'm on pins now.
Jake sent me a message last week at, say, 19 minutes past two saying, oh, it's Tuesday.
Yeah. It was when my alarm went off that said Radio City Talk and I was in Southport. I was like, oh, no.
See, this is the mistake you made, is that you set the alarm for the exact moment you had to be somewhere when really you should give yourself at least 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It was basically a different bank holiday. Bank holiday just totally threw me off. I still don't know what day it is. And then we've got another one coming up, which is just going to do it again. But as I said to you, I fully embraced the bank holiday and I cut off from work, and that is good for my mental health.
Yeah, but that makes me think that you were hungover.
I
fully embraced the bank holiday. Sounds like I got drunk throughout.
I mean, yeah, probably. Probably still am. But no, it was... No, I just had a cut off from work, and that was I enjoyed it.
Who, the thing is, right, and this feeds into the conversation mm-hmm. I had with Paul Cope. Who, right, after everyone's had a 4-day bank holiday, really, who's there going, right, that's it, everybody get back to work. This has been nothing but a lack of productivity for 4 days now. It's just a thing where there's like the programming in our minds is basically, well, the rules say we could have 4 days off, so we had the 4 days off. Now we go back into... Whereas everybody, if everyone just kind of caught a glimpse at each other, just going back in the office and going, you know what, if we just had a five, if one time in a year we had a 5-day bank holiday, would it really affect anything? Now, if you're a brain surgeon, or, you know, you are doing something which is absolutely important, but if everyone just went, you know what, let's just have another day. Should we just have another day?
Yeah, I'm in more for it. If we want to kind of put out a petition, that's fine. But I also think that whether it's a weekend or a bank holiday, I think so many of us, say, for example, a normal weekend, I think you'd enjoy your Friday night and you enjoy the Saturday and maybe the Saturday night. But on a Sunday, I think you're preparing on a Sunday for work on the Monday. So really, you're getting Friday night and Saturday. And I think that with that programmed about, okay, I've got to be ready for tomorrow, or dreading I've got to go in tomorrow, that work does take over. And as you said, it's exactly ties into what was discussed yesterday as well. But it's so important to have those cut-offs.
But I had, because I, that late Friday on the last bank holiday, late Friday, I went over to Manchester and I thought, you know, I said to my wife, I said, I feel like we've got like a free pass.
Yeah. That we feel like you're cheating a little bit.
Yeah, like, because now on a Saturday... Because I don't want to get to Sunday night and think, oh, I've not done anything this weekend. I should have done something. Mm. My life is now like swimming, library. It's the stuff you do. It's the walk in the park. And all things I absolutely enjoy. But they're things that you do because actually you want to give your kids kind of experience as well. And otherwise, you sit down and do nothing. You don't have any moments. You don't have memories to share because you think, what do we even do this weekend? Not a lot, really. You can do, you know, indoor stuff, crafts and painting and all that. Absolutely. But you've got to do something. Whereas I kind of felt when I had like the extra sort of the extra time on the bank holiday, I was thinking, I could do nothing and not have to feel guilty about it. But why should I ever feel guilty about ever doing nothing?
What did you do?
Well, we went over to Manchester to see some friends. We were there late afternoon, Friday. Yeah. The sun was still shining. We had a beer. We were outside. My little 4-year-old, she was running around in her bare feet around the streets of Manchester. Imagine that. I'm painting some sort of halcyon picture there. And then the other thing, then it was like Easter Sunday, we had a barbecue. Easter Sunday, barbecue. Yeah. And I was thinking, I wasn't thinking, oh, we need to get him in the bath here because it's back to school tomorrow, because I knew there was another day.
Exactly.
Coming. And it felt like you could just have those relaxation levels just a little bit turned up.
Yeah, I think we've discussed it as well before, haven't we, about 4-day working weeks and how that is working in other... Is it Sweden, is it? Or
Let's say it's working. Let's say it's definitely working in Sweden.
Or somewhere.
And for that reason, we should definitely have it here.
But that it is about that productivity and that what's better for the workforce, what's better for us as people, so that we're not in situations as we described yesterday, in that dread and being in that kind of that cycle of work taking over life.
Which is exactly where the conversation picks up with Paul Cope in episode 111 of Mental Health Monday. Paul's written a book about basically secrets of changing your career. Paul did He did all the right things, but for all seemingly the right reasons, but turned out to be potentially the wrong reasons. Paul laid out his story. He wanted to be a solicitor because he saw a bloke once and he was a solicitor and he had a nice car. So then he just kept saying he wanted to be a solicitor. His family were very proud that he was going to be a solicitor because he was saying he was going to be a solicitor. So he looked into how to be a solicitor, and then it meant going to college, university. So, well, he did that. And then he set up a solicitor's firm because he wanted to be a solicitor. Then was lying in bed at night thinking, why have I done all this? Can't sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, having to pay wages, work out how to pay rents and all kind of different things. Because he had it in his head that he wanted to be a solicitor, even though he didn't really want to be a solicitor. He wanted to be something else. He didn't know what it was, but it wasn't that. But life just kind of happened around him.
Yeah. I was going to say it was a trap that Paul fell in, and in some ways it was, but a trap that he made a huge success out of as well. And the same trap or whatever, however you want to describe it, can happen in any role that anybody falls in. And I think it's this idea of expectations and what you are meant to be. And also, as Paul described, the guilt of telling family that he didn't want to do something that he said he wanted to do, which then when you say that out loud, it does sound ridiculous, but actually all of us probably feel like that as well. I recently got interviewed for something, and it was about like leaders, and they said, you know, what advice would you give to somebody who was kind of coming through university now and deciding what they wanted to be? And I said, the best advice that I can give anyone is to be true to yourself, but not in a kind of like a motivational sticker that you buy from B&M's or somewhere. What I mean by that is, if you decide halfway through doing something that you don't like it, that you don't want to do that, and you want to change your mind, change your mind. If you don't know what you want to be when you're 18, 21, 40, 50, that's okay. You don't have to go along somebody else's expectations.
But I think, Jake, the reason we do that is because it feels like that's the only way you can do it. So if you sign up for a course and you pay £9,000 a year, and you get 3 years you get 6 months out from the exam, say, and you go, oh my word, what am I doing this for? I don't want to do this. And you decide to drop out. You feel like you can't drop out because you've invested in it. And it's that thing about sort of the cost that you've invested into something. It's the same when people get into relationships and have been in long-term relationships and then just feel like the next thing they should probably do is have kids or get married.
Mm.
Because they think that will be just the next. They're just thinking, well, this is the person I'm with, so I'll do that with them. Instead of thinking, is this the person I want to be with? And it's a thing of, well, if you don't want to be with them, is it too just inconvenient to have to deal with how you would split everything and how you would walk away? Equally, jobs, if you wanted to do something completely different, yeah, but then you'd have to maybe take a bit of a pay cut because maybe the next job you go in and you think, well, if you did that, you couldn't afford X, Y, or Z and you just bought the new car. And life has this momentum that kind of rolls with it. And it feels almost impossible to sort of go against the tide.
It does. And part of that is that we don't necessarily get a minute to stop and think and say, actually, is this what I want? Especially as you start kind of getting older, maybe have financial tie-ins to different things, mortgages, and as you said, family, people who depend on you. But I mean, in regards to dropping out of university, even just the phrase dropping out sounds like a negative. It sounds like you've fell out of that, like you've failed almost. In terms of changing job and having to do this, it all feels like risks. It all feels like, and it's kind of discussed in a way that if you say that you're admitting that you're not good enough for that, or, you know, the expectations of what you were meant to achieve, you weren't to achieve it. But what I would say is that regardless of all of that, nothing is worth the happiness that you will feel internally. And again, relationships. How many times are people staying in relationships that they're not particularly entirely happy in because the guilt of making somebody else upset and changing and almost rocking that status quo and upsetting other people for the sake of your own happiness?
But equally, I think if you were saying to your family, oh, well, I've been doing this job and I felt miserable for 10 years, and they'll go, well, why didn't you say something? Well, I didn't want to let you down. Well, if you'd have just told me you weren't happy, of course we would have been understanding. And Paul set that out with his family going, you know that job you said I'd be really proud if I got it? Well, I got that job and now I don't want to do it anymore. Is that okay? They were like,
of course, fine.
Yeah. Of course it is. But that's about, and he likened it to deconstructing a prison. Building a prison around yourself, and prison, you know, sounds like a but it's not always, it's just constraints around yourself. And he thought, well, if I built it up, I can destruct it and pull it down piece by piece. But I think that's that thing of the wholesale change that people think, well, can I make a wholesale change today that then changes everything? And in most cases, you can't, just because of the way things work. You can't do something which means that everything is different as of tomorrow, because you can't move to a new location, get a new job, find a new house, find a new whatever, and it all be different by the next day. But you can go, you know what? I've got long-term goals here. In the next 3 years, I want to achieve that. And the pathway to that change is 7 secrets, as Paul sets out, or the steps that you've decided are appropriate for you.
Yeah, it's about having a long-term goal, but short-term steps. Nothing's gonna drastic is gonna change overnight, but it's knowing, it's giving yourself achievable things, and also knowing, I think we're always looking for acceptance from other people, and sometimes the hardest thing is yourself and your own acceptance of making a decision. Sometimes making the decision is the hardest thing that we can do, but it's about making not only small and short term steps but achievable ones. Whatever that might be, I don't know, doing a half an hour of writing a day based on something that you are interested in. That might be doing a little bit of market research. That might be going to the bank and getting some advice. They're all things that you can do, but you know that you can take those steps and that you're in control of those steps and that you can make those goals achievable and be achieving them, giving yourself credit for what they actually are. But what it all comes down to is being true to what you actually want to do, and knowing that you can change your mind at any point as well.
One of the other factors as well with Paul was that idea of we define ourselves in 2019, and I think this has probably always been the case, by what your job is. And I can't see a way, unless we just change the way we respond, to how we actually get away from that. So if you, here's the scene. You bump into someone who you went to school with and you've not seen them for 15 years. And they go, oh, what are you up to now? Your response is probably going to be, what is my job? With the inference that the question is actually, how much are you earning now? That's what it's based around. How are you defining yourselves for 8 hours in a day? Forget the other hours in the day. For those 8 hours in the day when you're at work, what are you then? Because that's how I'm going to judge your success. And that's probably how you're going to try and impress me with your success.
Yeah. Half agree. Because I think that ultimately is probably...
That's what they're looking for, isn't it?
It is.
And a part of it is because I need to compare myself to what you're up to.
Yeah, probably. But also, I think if you think of you asking the question, I think part of it is about, like, you know, what you're kind of interested in, what is the world that you're living in now. But then that comes back around to it, because what might be your interests and whatever you're doing might not actually be your job.
No, but exactly. But if someone sees you after 15 years and you go, I'm big into me stamp collecting.
Yeah.
They're going to go, but what are you?
No, they'll just say, see you later.
Yeah, but they might go, no, but that's the thing that kind of, that's the thing that defines me, you might want to say. Might not be the thing you're doing all the time, but that's the thing I want to be judged on at this particular moment. But they don't want to know that. They want to know whether or not you've got a better job than them.
So what you want to know, when you ask someone what you do now?
No, because I kind of just think, it's more like, where do you live? That's where I can't, because I just think, where's
life? How big's your house?
Well, no, because I almost just think, like, where's life taking you? Because I've obviously not seen you for that time.
That's what I mean.
And I'd have bumped into you if you'd have been in around. So what are you up to? So I always go, what are you up to now? So when people, I always go, I work on the radio in Liverpool. That doesn't, I don't go, I've got a 4-hour radio show every single day. And it's, you know, I don't go down that. I go, I'll work on the radio in Liverpool. And people go, oh, Liverpool? oh, we went there for, and then it becomes about
yeah, but the
else.
Radio, can we get back to the radio show?
There were some awards actually I went to various. Oh, the other thing is like, because I always really care about like family and stuff. You got kids, you got family. But then I feel if you say, you got kids and they go, no, you think, no, oh, well, it was a terrible question to ask because that might have been a sore point. Options might not have come. They might just be no interest and they'd be thinking, oh, here we go again. Somebody else shaming me because I've decided not to have a family. Then I feel bad. But it's partly because I want to go, yeah, I've got two kids because I love to define myself now by being
what defines you? Is that what defines you, being a dad?
I think the role in life which I feel more comfortable in, more so than any other role I've ever had, is being called dad.
Yeah.
Only because I've kind of done different jobs and it's always been a bit like, is that what's that thing where you're kind of like faking it till you make it kind of thing? And I think there's always an element of that within work roles because it kind of a little bit false. Job titles and things like that, they kind of like made up titles because that's the thing they have to put onto the contract. But when a child looks at you and calls you dad, that is a thing where you go, yeah, absolutely. This is the top job, if you like.
Yeah. No,
but
I like
go
that.
With that. Otherwise, so, do you consider yourself to be a dad or a husband? No, I consider myself to be a broadcaster.
Yeah, broadcaster first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, well, 4 hours a day, yeah, I'm on the radio. The rest of the time, I'm a dad. I'm actually a dad when I'm on the radio too.
So if I hadn't seen you for 10 years and we see again, what would you want me to say to you while you're up to now? What's your interests?
What are you up to now? You say, what are you up to now? I go, yeah, I'm still on the radio. We've not had any more kids.
10 years.
Not very ambitious, are you, mate? Is that what you'd be thinking?
But that's what I mean. So what's the question? Is what are you up to now or what do you do for work? Is it not asking the same type of thing?
No, I think what are you up to? What are you up to? Because then you can go, what am I up to now? I'm just walking through Williamson Square.
Why? Stop following me and asking questions.
I think it's a tough one because I think that is that thing where there is a sense that if you give that response of, I'm doing this, then there's, oh, have you seen him now? Or it becomes a boasting thing. Or it becomes a, oh, he's still doing that.
But then, as I say, I think the fact that your job isn't necessarily your interest, or for some people might not be, is quite telling in itself. And I know not everybody can do a job that they absolutely love and does cover all their interests. But I think if you're in a job or any situation, relationship or anything, of course, that you think, this isn't for me, I think everybody should feel like they can take steps towards something that is for them. There might not be something out there. You might not even know what that is. But if you can take steps to kind of embrace what you do want to do and having an honest conversation with yourself about who am I, what do I like, what can I do? It doesn't necessarily have to be your full-time job, but you can be doing more of that.
Absolutely. But also having an ability to have time to find out what those things are. Because people might go, well, what do you enjoy doing? You go, what? I don't have time to enjoy doing anything. I can tell you what I do because it's all the things that I've got to do.
Yeah.
But what do I enjoy doing? Give me 3 weeks off and then I'll find something that I enjoy doing. But a lot of people, you don't get that because of the cycle, because of the rat race, which comes and it keeps going day after day after day after day.
Yeah. It's hard. And that's why I am a big believer in cutoffs when it comes to work in particular. And being as strict as you possibly can to say, I am not going to look at any work emails when I'm sat here. That's been my kind of biggest turning point, I would say, in the last year and a half. It's just said cutoffs and having family time and not taking me work home with me as much as I possibly can. When I say that, I work from home, but you know what I mean. I just don't do work.
Once he leaves that kitchen table, he ain't doing nout. Jake, what's going on chasing the stigma?
We have been shortlisted for Digital Leaders 100 Award in the charity category, and we need votes. It's free to vote. It's on our social media at Chasing Stigma on Facebook, Chasing Stigma on Twitter, and we just need as many votes as we possibly can to be. We've been shortlisted in the top 10 digital charities in the UK, which is a remarkable achievement for us. But yeah, we'd quite like that award sat on our cabinet.
I forgot to say we've been nominated for an award as well.
Oh, me and you.
Yeah.
That's all right then.
Prolific Norths.
Oh yeah.
It's over at it's in Manchester, 23rd of May.
Who else has been nominated for that?
We're up against Stacey Dooley.
Is she going to be there?
I don't know. She might be. She might be investigating someone somewhere.
Well, I wouldn't turn up if I was you then.
Rock, sport and talk.
This is Liverpool Live with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.